Always Crashing in the Same Car by Wonky Elk, read by CookieMom6067. Damn it, John. You're 36 and you've never had a stable relationship. Patrick Shepherd adjusted his tie and gave him that familiar look that, I'm trying to love you, son, but you just keep on disappointing me, expression, which had started somewhere around John's 11th or 12th birthday, just as soon as he got an ounce of healthy rebellion, and had rarely left his dad's face since. Actually, I did date this really horsey girl, and one time, please stop being juvenile, John. It demeans us both. Well, as long as I'm taking you down with me. John adjusted his expensively shod feet on the desk to just the right angle of insolence. Outwardly, he remained calm and smirking, but inside, he was wondering when he'd become trapped in this desperate teenage rebellion phase with his father, somehow unable to move past it, nor past the desire underneath it all, to just make that crushing disappointment go away. Maybe it was when he chose family loyalty over his own personal ambitions and stuck with the business instead of joining the Air Force. John had watched a lot of films, read a whole lot more books than he was admitting to anyone. Being underestimated was considerably more comfortable than being overestimated, and he was pretty sure that you were supposed to be rewarded for that sort of thing. A warm, smug glow of satisfaction, the realization that family was more important than anything, a swelling soundtrack of sickening sweetness with strings. Instead, he had just built up a hard crust of resentment and a growing sense of emptiness and frustration. It wasn't that he hated his job, particularly, or was bad at it. It was only this pervasive feeling that there was something so much more important that he could be doing with his life, without any counterbalancing idea that he was, at least, making his father happy. Because the man just didn't know how to do that. To do happy, and maybe somewhere John had lost the knack as well. Patrick just looked at him, the disappointment crinkling the edges of his face, blending in with another popular putting up with my son look that was something between a weary contempt and a sort of emphatic sense of rising above it all. The board of directors have some concerns. You may think that your future as CEO is assured, but believe me, that is not the case. If they can't trust your moral values and sense of commitment, then how can they allow you to be in control of the company? A sharp jab of anger rocketed through his spine, even as he noted the use of the word they instead of we, and turned it over and over in his head, mining it for the slightest scrap of personal approval. If the board of directors are seriously using my sex life as the main criterion for judging my fitness to run a business, then I personally would have a few doubts about letting them be in control. His father dismissed this impatiently. I'm aware that you tend to treat my advice with as little seriousness as everything else in your life, but I'm giving it anyway. You need to get married, preferably within the next 6 months, because the business is moving and changing fast, and you are far from the only candidate out there whom we can fast-track to the top. I'm not getting any younger, John, and I need a successor. Despite our differences, I would still prefer it to be you. Despite every sensible part of him pointing out that this was at least mostly ego, the dislike of his own company going outside of the family, and control, especially since John's brother Dave had quietly, unfussily changed jobs and moved away without any sign of rebellion or resentment at all, except for that simple, devastating act. John's inner, lost and hurting 12-year-old apparently decided to latch onto this hard as a genuine, albeit heavily filtered and conditional, I love you. That was the only reason he could think of that he was actually considering the idea. Hey, Taylor, want to get married? Taylor lunged forward with her sticks, slipping past his lax defenses and giving him a brisk 1-2 hit, which put him neatly and painfully on his back. I'll take that as a no. Taylor held out a hand to help him up again. John, I have come to greatly value our friendship, but there has never been any point at which I have looked upon you with any romantic interest at all. No, well, me neither. Taylor smiled understandingly at him, forbearing to point out the 3 months or so after she began teaching him martial arts, when John had had a definite and obvious crush, which she had simply neatly sidestepped until it went away. It was true enough, though, that their relationship was purely platonic nowadays on both sides, and all the stronger for it. I guess I've just been thinking about settling down recently, as a general idea. They gathered up their equipment with the ease of long practice and headed out of the gym together. There is certainly a push towards that goal as being the universal ideal. In my opinion, that is one of the reasons so many marriages do not succeed. John made a noncommittal noise in response. It wouldn't do to agree with her and blatantly admit, even to himself, that he was pursuing the idea purely for the sake of paternal approval. Maybe. But there's something to be said for the idea of coming home to someone. Familiarity, comfort. John stopped himself before he actively started thinking of his prospective marital partner in terms of gently worn-in slippers, all snug and easy on the toes after a long day in Gucci. It's just, I haven't had a relationship that's lasted much more than a week in the last 10 years. Maybe it's time to look beyond that. Taylor gazed at him thoughtfully for a moment, and John got the feeling she understood that there was more to this than he was saying, but refrained from pushing. There is no shame in enjoying sex for its own sake, but if this is truly your desire, John, then I sincerely hope that you find someone, provided that someone is not me. John heaved a long, suffering sigh. You make one lousy proposal, and you will be teased for it eternally, as it should be. But Taylor's smile told a different story, and they parted comfortably, with every trace of awkwardness gone. By the time that John had been dating with long-term commitment in mind for a whole month, he had managed to persuade himself that his motivations for doing this were entirely personal, that the emptiness in his life was solely caused by the lack of a partner instead of any other far more complicated and hard-to-resolve reasons, which was why it was so frustrating that he just couldn't find what he was looking for. So far, he had dated 8 men and 3 women, all of whom were beautiful and sexy, most of whom were perfectly nice people, and one of them had taken him home to show him his amazing model airplane collection, which had proven so fascinating that they hadn't even gotten around to the sex. John really could have picked almost any one of them as a respectable choice to continue dating with a view to eventual marriage, purposely putting any idea of deadlines for the wedding out of his mind, because this wasn't about pleasing his father. If that happened as a side effect, then it would merely be a pleasant bonus. So he wasn't quite sure why he turned down any suggestions to take things further, except that beautiful, sexy, and nice somehow wasn't enough. He was unwise enough to voice as much to Ronan Dex, his only other truly close friend, to whom he hadn't proposed, not even in fun, mostly because Ronan was newly and soppily in love with a brilliant surgeon, and John somehow doubted that Ronan would throw her over just to be his best friend's comfy slippers. Sounds like my last client would be perfect for you. Yeah? Not beautiful, not sexy, not nice. I think you'd like him. Ronan worked as a bodyguard, specializing in short-term assignments where a serious and immediate threat was present. His last client, it turned out, had been a notable astrophysicist engineer, hotly tipped for the Nobel Prize, who had been targeted several times in the last few years by various nefarious groups. Shouldn't he get in some longer-term security? His company already has a team in place for all their scientists, but they were getting suspicious that there might be a security leak, so they called me in as backup, just as well. Ronan drank his beer long and deep with a slight shudder of memory, and John got the impression that things had been close, very close. It took a hell of a lot to shake Ronan Dex. Well, kind though it is of you to try and set me up with someone you dislike. Didn't say I didn't like him, just that he wasn't all those things. Ronan turned a deadpan face on him, and John found that he had absolutely no idea whether Ronan was serious about hooking him up with this unattractive, unpleasant trouble magnet or not. I think I'll pass, Ronan shrugged. Your loss. They drank a little more beer, and the conversation turned largely to surgeons and how amazing, brilliant, sweet, and adorable they could be until they called it a night. John knocked 5 more people off his list of prospective spouses in as many days, but he wasn't prepared to give up. In fact, with each failure, he felt even more determined to find someone special and damn well marry the hell out of them. Dr. Rodney McKay was not on his short list. John had been enjoying a lazy Saturday morning, practicing golf putts in his study, when the man had knocked at his door like a peal of thunder. John Shepherd? Good God, he wasn't kidding about the hair. John looked his visitor up and down. Mid-30s, receding hairline, wide mouth, which his uncharitable frame of mind immediately liked to a toad's, sturdy build, ugly brown shirt over a humorous science t-shirt, full face frown, and clenched his teeth together into some semblance of a smile, hoping that the go away behind it was coming out loud and clear. Can I help you in some way? Well, obviously I'm hoping so, or I wouldn't be standing on your doorstep, getting cold, incidentally, so if you have any coffee, maybe even a light snack? John moved slightly, so as to block the door a little more pointedly. I have this personal rule about letting complete strangers into the house. Call it a quirk. He increased both the wideness of his smile and the implicit lack of welcome underneath to level 4, obnoxious as all hell. I'm hardly a complete stranger. My name's Rodney McKay, Dr. Rodney McKay. Didn't Ronan mention me? He said you were looking for a spouse. I also happen to be looking for one for, well, reasons which are too long to get into right now. I was hoping we could come to an arrangement. John closed his eyes and silently cursed Ronan to 1,000 years of torment. This was presumably the not beautiful, not sexy, and not nice scientist whom he'd recently babysat and whom John very clearly and distinctly had declined. I think there's been some misunderstanding. But it seemed that it had been a tactical error to close his eyes because Rodney was now very much inside the house and making a direct, unswerving beeline for the coffee machine. Obviously, we'll have to negotiate terms. A quick ceremony, nothing fussy, splitting the costs. It would make more sense for me to move in here than the other way around, but I'd like to keep my apartment with a view to spending a couple of nights a month there for work purposes. I imagine there will be unavoidable social functions on both sides, so we'll have to work out something mutually acceptable. But just so you're aware, I absolutely refuse to be arm candy more than once a month. Busy man here. Rodney followed this speech, delivered at a dizzying speed, with a swallow of coffee and a look of blissful satisfaction, which eased all the frowning edges off him and made his face strangely pleasing for a moment, before John reminded himself that he was an uninvited guest, making wholly ridiculous propositions and drinking all his best coffee. How had he even known to look in that drawer? Look, Rodney, I don't know what Ronan told you. Rodney held up one finger, which was large yet oddly elegant and arresting. John Shepherd, mid-30s, scion of some stuffy business tycoon, quote-unquote smarter than he looks, needs someone to marry who's a little more stimulating and substantial than the usual people you date, which, as I'm sure you'll agree, I can amply provide, along with all the cachet of being the smartest man in the world and a shoe-in for the Nobel. Now, money shouldn't be an issue. We can sort out a prenup if you want, but I imagine that we'll maintain separate accounts, though possibly also set up a joint one for any shared bills. I will need a room of my own to work in, and I should warn you that I'm deathly allergic to citrus and generally not good with people. Also, the word arrogant has been used rather liberally in reference to me, and, probably not without cause. Other than that, however, I don't see why we should have any problems. Rodney downed another mug of coffee, which somehow John had just stood and meekly watched him make, instead of firmly removing both mug and coffee. Oh, and the packet of cookies he was now industriously digging into from his greedy yet hypnotic hands and shoving him very heartily outside. Oh, unless, of course, you have any major flaws I should be aware of. Ronan assures me that you're a good person, though, and he strikes me as trustworthy, even if he is a little over-inclined to pull people about like luggage. Rodney finished his second cookie, licking his lips with essential enjoyment that put all notions of toes right out of John's mind. His eyes, very blue, very direct, very appealing. And damn it, John was not supposed to be warming to him, widened with inquiry. John was almost tempted for a wild moment to actually tell him to run down a list of the very worst of John Shepherd, either as a deterrent or almost proudly, or even just because he could, because he was being openly invited to share himself, but without any sense of real pressure or even judgment. He had an odd but powerful feeling that Rodney wouldn't be put off by his personal hang-ups, and the restless ache that he'd lived with for so long would feel odd without it. Then he remembered himself and closed down with a snap. Instead, he lobbed McKay an easy smile and a flippant drawl. "Well, I'm addicted to college football and things that go fast. I'm a lousy cook and I spend a lot of my free time either running or flying, so I can't promise you much in the way of companionship." Rodney brightened up at that, becoming alarmingly attractive with his happy little smile and an air of contagious excitement. "Ah, perfect. Well, not the football so much. Seriously, could you have picked a more cliched sport? But the one thing I was a little uneasy about with this whole marriage thing was having to spend a lot of time with you. Oh, not that I have anything against you personally. In fact, you're actually rather, well, let's just say I'm pleasantly surprised. But I have a lot of important work to do, and I keep some odd hours, so it would be nice to get on with that without constantly feeling like a terrible husband. As for cooking, I tend to do that myself anyway, allergies and such." He walked up to John and held out his hand with such assurance that John was shaking it before he had a chance to think. "Well then, barring some finalization of the details, I think we have ourselves a deal. I'll drop you an email and we can work out dates and times. Good doing business with you." John would have protested. He really would. But Rodney chose that moment to lick the last few crumbs from his fingers, and it turned out that Ronan's assessment of not sexy was very wide of the mark. Then Rodney was gone, and John was apparently betrothed. He didn't remember much of golf practice after that. John had gone to bed on Saturday, determined to just decline Rodney's offer as soon as he sent it over. And he was really going to have words with Ronan about giving out personal information. But on Sunday, he woke up equally determined to accept. After all, wasn't this actually perfect? John had convinced himself now that he really did want to settle down. But there was a large part of him which didn't like to even think the words long-term commitment, which enjoyed the sex well enough but didn't want all the emotional baggage and obligations and wrenching pain which came with anything serious. John had put his heart out there in the ring before and had it comprehensively broken. He wasn't planning to risk feeling like that again. Rodney could provide him with that stability without any danger of emotional connection. True, there had been an unexpected spark of attraction, but Rodney had made it quite clear that this whole thing was on a business footing. Besides which, marrying Rodney managed to combine both doing exactly what his father had asked with being the most obnoxious possible way of pulling that off. John could easily picture his father's image of the perfect daughter-in-law, elegant, well-dressed, pretty, possessed of all the correct opinions, gaining not just a son-in-law, but the particular whirlwind that was Rodney McKay, would throw him so completely that he might never get off the ropes again. Rodney's email came through before John had finished his morning run, and he sat down with it over breakfast, taking in the neatly outlined agreement with as much care and detachment as he would have done any company contract or business proposal. It was all fairly straightforward and acceptable. Rodney had been careful to emphasize their essential independence from each other, both financially and in terms of personal interaction, and even separate bathrooms. It was less a marital contract and more of a roommate agreement with extra paperwork and an understanding that they would frequently hold hands in public. John wondered if that extended to kissing, and then realized that there was a glaring omission in the otherwise very thorough document on the subject of sex in general. Had Rodney left that out because he assumed they just wouldn't? Or because he assumed they would? Or perhaps, after all, he had simply concluded, quite rightly, that this was something better discussed in person. First, though, John thought he'd pay a call on Ronan. "What the hell were you thinking?" Ronan leaned back against his chair and had the gall to look amused. "Was thinking you needed someone to marry, and turns out so did McKay. Pretty simple solution."
"I didn't say I needed someone to marry, just that I was thinking about it, in the abstract."
"Didn't seem all that abstract. Besides, McKay's right for you. You need complicated."
"Actually, that's exactly what I don't need. The only reason I'm accepting, in fact, is because McKay has a very straightforward..."
John glared at Ronan's told-you-so smile and eyebrows.
"You still don't get to give people my email."
Ronan nodded.
"Sorry."
He did not look sorry, even the slightest, tiniest bit. Scheduling conflicts meant that the betrothal was carried on by email and text until the next weekend, when Rodney summarily invited himself around to John's again, although he did at least offer to cook. John hadn't, in fact, had much to argue with about Rodney's proposal. He nitpicked a few details anyway, just to be awkward, and because Rodney's incredulous responses were comedy gold. But despite his more than respectable salary, John hadn't seen the need to get a house with more than two bedrooms. And so if Rodney wanted an office of his own, then he was going to have to share a bedroom with John, which required a certain amount of delicate discussion. Or, John had intended it to be delicate. He was rapidly learning that the word evaporated on contact with Rodney.
"So, we need to discuss the sleeping arrangements."
"Ah, yes, sex. The old beast with two backs. Well, personally, I'm all for it. But obviously, there's no obligation. This is purely an arrangement of convenience. And I'm not quite so egotistical as to assume that you would..." "Well, the offer stands."
John blinked and blinked again. His first instinct was that Rodney was proving once again to be the opposite of complicated, except that he wasn't sure if this very openness didn't wind him up further into tangles of indecision. Rodney was still blunt and tactless and annoying, but he was also funny and cute when he smiled and had some damn fine arms on him and, well, in short, John was strongly tempted to take up the offer of marital sex, but then how would that affect the emotionless, detached quality of the arrangement?
"I guess we'll play that by ear."
"Right, of course."
Rodney looked a little hurt by what must have sounded like a polite no, but swallowed it quickly in a way that suggested he was already resigned to being hurt and had pre-braced himself for it.
"So, can I take it that we've come to an agreement?"
John nodded slowly. The fact that he was really, truly, actually going to get married, and to a near stranger, sinking in suddenly and fully like a cold lead weight to the stomach. He felt like he'd wandered into a slightly offbeat version of his own life, in which the solid ground was liable to shift and warp at any moment.
"Good. Then I don't see why we should have to delay things too much."
John let Rodney make all the arrangements, except for choosing the rings, because that was something he was going to be stuck with for a while at least, and he didn't trust Rodney not to pick something heavy or garish. He needn't have worried, however.
"I'm a scientist, John. My main requirement from a ring is that it not be a safety hazard. In fact, I'll probably take it off a lot anyway, while I'm working in the lab. I'm thinking of putting it in one of those little plastic card sleeves to keep it safe, but something smooth and discreet is fine."
They got married a week later at a registrar, with only Taylor and Ronan as witnesses,
because Rodney's only close relatives lived in Canada, and John was damned if he was going to have his dad be there, either pointing out how once again John had disappointed his expectations, or getting quietly furious that there wasn't a big expensive wedding, with the guests carefully chosen for cachet and internal politics. At the end of the ceremony, Rodney kissed John with no hesitation whatsoever. It was all over before he could work out whether it had been weird or good or bad or some alternate option, which he couldn't quite put his mental finger on. They had decided not to take a honeymoon because Rodney was deep into something desperately important for the future of science and all of humanity, apparently, and John had a lot of meetings about meetings. So they went straight home after the ceremony, Rodney kissing John again absently, then disappearing into his new study for, quite possibly, the rest of his life. John put on his favorite football match, downed a couple of beers, and spent so long trying to work out if he was relieved or disappointed by the complete lack of impact that being married was having so far, that he fell asleep on the couch, at an angle highly protested by his neck and spine in the morning. But he still took a moment to get up, because the blanket, which had mysteriously wandered over and settled on him in the night, was just too damn cozy. "Your presentation was adequate, if a little looser than I would hope for in someone of your position. I believe we have a reasonable chance of making budget this quarter." Patrick Shepherd delivered this faint praise, as he usually did, without looking directly at his son until he raised his head in a clear gesture of dismissal. John didn't heed it. He leaned slightly against the wall, in a way he had nicely calculated to be infuriating, without giving any rational grounds for complaint. "Do you have something to add?" John shrugged. "I think you need to look a little further into the new guy in accounts. Something a little shady going on there. I got married yesterday." "Oh, and we should look into a better caterer. The labeling on allergens is pretty lax. Killing our employees is probably kind of bad for the share price." He got almost out of the office before his father called him back. "You did what?" "I just noticed a couple of dishes which might have caused Don't pretend to be dumb, John. It doesn't suit you. You know perfectly well that I'm talking about your marriage. Why wasn't I invited?" "Well, you know how it is. We got caught up in the romance of it all, and before you know it..." John held his hand up to showcase the ring he'd been waiting to see if his father would notice, but his father was either a little less acutely observant than John had always thought him, or even more thorough in his mental dismissal of his son than he'd realized. Both options were painful. Patrick's jaw twitched, but he maintained his composure, that almost perfect containment of all emotion which John himself had never quite been able to achieve, falling into a halfway house where he couldn't express himself freely, but couldn't sand himself down to a smooth enough perfection to satisfy the ideal he hadn't quite meant to internalize. "You will bring your wife to dinner Thursday evening, 7 o'clock. Please do not be unpunctual." Then he bowed his head down to the paperwork again, and John left, unsure who'd won that round, feeling like it probably wasn't him. Rodney didn't emerge from his study, except to grab snacks and occasionally pace about like an overwhelmed clockwork toy, for 3 whole days. Then he came out, yawning and stretching, just as John was trying to decide which takeout he'd had least often in the last couple of weeks. No, this one's on me. I finally cracked the... Well, I can't go into details, but let's just say I'm in a celebratory mood." Rodney apparently had a close personal relationship with the local pizza parlor, who understood both the seriousness of his allergy. John had been given a crash course in EpiPens and now carried his own just in case, and his preference for food that was plentiful, bland, and comforting. Fortunately, they also did pizzas with flavor, and John found himself thoroughly enjoying working his way through a few slices while they slumped in front of a B-movie, snug and companionable. "Oh, now that is just an insult to scientists everywhere. Did you see all the health and safety violations? How many variables unaccounted for?" "Well, I was a little distracted by the ethical lapses and the giant bunnies." They joked their way through the whole movie, and John was surprised to find himself sad when the credits rolled. He turned to Rodney just in time to catch an enormous yawn, almost large enough for a giant bunny to mistake for a burrow and hop on down. It shouldn't have been cute, and yet. Rodney blinked at him, suffused suddenly with an air of softness like a well-loved teddy bear, his hair sticking up slightly as if begging to be petted. His expression eased, of all the focus and tension which John had begun to get used to. John wondered how much sleep he'd got over the last few days, and whether he'd spent most or all of that in his office chair. "I think we ought to get you to a real bed." A sleepy Rodney was a very different proposition than a bullish, determined one who had a plan and fully intended to see it through. He let John pull him up from the couch and gently steer him to the bed without a word of protest, just an occasional happy remark about his project, which he wasn't tired enough to go into specifics about. They brushed their teeth and Rodney stripped down to boxers and a soft, worn t-shirt, working mostly on automatic pilot, falling asleep seconds after he had pulled the covers over and spread himself out on his stomach, face squashed into the pillow, in a way which combined comical, blissful, and endearing. John wriggled in beside him, feeling it slightly unfair that on their first night actually in bed together, he was the only one who got to feel awkward, uncertain, and a little horny. More than a little, actually. Rodney's legs were strong and firm. His shoulders and arms almost demanded that they be held onto. His stomach begged for pets, and his face was strangely easy to get used to. John found himself developing an unmistakable interest. He considered the situation for a moment. Obviously, he wasn't planning to wake Rodney. The man clearly needed his sleep, but equally obvious was the fact that John wasn't going to get any sleep himself until he'd taken care of business. And after all, he was in bed with his spouse, legally wedded, and far from a shrinking violet on the subject of sex. There was nothing weird at all about masturbating next to your husband. John felt a sharp surge of interest and a feeling of discomfort gripping him both at once. Rodney might be his husband in name, but this was hardly a love match. He gripped himself firmly and considered for a moment before retiring to the bathroom, but his mind kept Rodney's image firmly in view. It only took a few brisk strokes to get relief. Rodney didn't budge when he came back to bed and slid in beside him, his steady breathing a lullaby, which sent John gently to sleep. It was realizing how little they knew each other and how that might look to his father that made John suggest they meet up for lunch the next day. But over breakfast, Rodney got an email congratulating him on the breakthrough and following that up with a strongly worded suggestion that he take a rest day before he followed through on it, presumably before he blew anything up. John was hypothesizing on the explosion thing, but he had a hunch that Rodney McKay and explosions were two things that went together like mac and cheese. "They can't do that. There's so much work to do." Rodney had clearly slept away his brief attack of mellowness and was practically vibrating with indignation and energy, a large amount of which John received in verbal form. There was something paradoxically relaxing about it, as though the more Rodney got worked up, the more John felt calm and centered. He checked his schedule, nothing he wouldn't have more or less slept through, and decided to take the day off too. It was about time he and his husband went on a date. They had proven to have very different ideas of what made a good date, so John had claimed the morning and let Rodney have the afternoon. He had considered taking Rodney to the skating rink. He was Canadian. They were all born with blades on their feet, right? Or for a matinee, film, or theater performance, but some part of him wanted to go straight in with what was really important to him. It was only a short drive out to the airfield, where he kept his Cessna Skyhawk, visiting regularly for flights and maintenance, or just checking up on the old girl and giving her metaphorical sugar cubes. He grinned at the mental image as he hopped out of the car. "I used to ride horses, racing across the fields when I was a kid. It was the fastest thing I could imagine. Felt like a rocket ship. And sure, I've been in plenty of faster cars, trains, planes, roller coasters since, but nothing else has ever felt quite that fast, that free, that reckless, like I might go right off the edge of the world and never regret a thing. He grinned at Rodney. But flying comes pretty damn close. John wasn't sure what Rodney's reaction would be to the plane. Interest, fear, boredom, dismissal. But it turned out that he really, really liked mechanical things, although his personal preference was for the taking apart and putting together, or even building them from scratch. As soon as the Commodore 64 came out when I was a kid, that was all I wanted. I tried to scrape together every scrap of money I could to try and get one. In the end, I had to do it in bits. Lucked into some thrown-away parts, managed to fill in the gaps, or mostly. I had to fix some broken pieces, make some substitutions, but it all came together in the end. Actually, I enjoyed that part almost as much as playing with it, maybe more. That's pretty cool. Yes. In retrospect, I probably should have done something like that for the science fair instead of building a nuclear bomb. John really wished he hadn't chosen that particular point to take a sip of water. Rodney slapped him on the back through the ensuing choking fit. A non-working model, obviously. Oh, obviously. Rodney was a little more reluctant to go up in the plane than he was to admire its fine mechanical health, but he did concede eventually. The weather was perfect, the plane responsive and welcoming to his touch. John let himself come alive in a way he rarely did out of a cockpit. Sometimes he felt he could do this for the rest of his life. A swift on the wing, pausing only for fuel, then off onto the air again where his heart belonged. Still, when he landed this time and dug out the picnic lunch, which Rodney had been dropping hints about his readiness for some time, despite the snack he had eaten to stave off hypoglycemia, there was something about the fresh air and good food and a companion with whom he found it genuinely easy to talk, as if they'd known each other all their lives, and a few lives before that to boot, which took the edge off the slight melancholy he always felt when his feet had touched the ground again. John had expected Rodney to choose the local science museum for his part of the date, or else something wildly inappropriate for romance. He was surprised, and a little disappointed, to be steered to the concert hall for a tame afternoon symphony. But when the music started, it was clear why Rodney had chosen this. He leaned towards the music like a flower to the sun, if that flower had some strong opinions on the sun's strength, ray choices, and beaming prowess. Not that he interrupted the concert, but his hands often played along with the melody, all unconscious on his lap, and he nodded approvingly when he was particularly impressed, frowned at the parts he felt less well executed, and expressed his thoughts afterwards at some length. John's musical preference was for country. The twanging guitar, which he'd learned to play but rarely did, the unashamed sentimentality, which felt forbidden and cathartic, the raw and characterful voices, especially of his personal favorite, Johnny Cash. But he could still appreciate a good classical tune, all the more so when it was filtered through Rodney's evident love for the form. You play piano, huh? Rodney looked surprised, then stared down at his fingers, which were quietly working through the Grieg piece he'd just been dissecting, apparently unbidden. Yes, actually, or I used to, not since I was a kid. He looked pained briefly, and then brightened up again. You know, I haven't been to a concert in, well, quite a while. Work always seemed more important. But this was good, really good. Thank you. John smiled at him, wondering how Ronan could ever have thought him not beautiful. Hey, you chose the place. But you took the day off for me. If you hadn't, I'd have been working in my study all day, brooding about all the things I could be doing in the lab. This was better. John thought of all the meetings he wasn't mentally yawning through, trying not to point out that everyone there could use about half the words, or less, with the same result. This is definitely better. There was a park nearby, and they strolled through it, for all the world like any other couple there, and when Rodney absentmindedly reached out for his hand, John held on to it. They spent so long in the park, walking, eating ice cream, getting deeply enmeshed into the backstories, highlights, and lowlights of their own personal favorite superheroes, that they only just had time to go back home and change before dinner. John thought that might have been deliberate on his part. He had been enjoying the day so much that he had been striving to give this part of it as little mental space as possible, putting it off and ignoring it, like a kid who hoped bedtime could be indefinitely delayed if they just focused really hard on the having fun.
"So what's your father like?"
"He's..." John sometimes wished that there was a better way of conveying your impressions than words, which only caught at best a fragment of the actual person you described, the way you felt about them and around them, your shared history, wound and coiled deep about your bones. "Business-focused."
"Business-focused? That's not a lot to..."
Rodney caught himself, glanced over at John, whose expression, smoothing, can't have been going as well as he thought, and nodded.
"Oh, right. My father was a jerk, too, if it helps. Both parents, actually."
"Yes, Rodney, it helps me immensely that you had a sucky childhood." Rodney missed the sarcasm entirely and settled back in his seat, looking so pleased to have been of assistance via the medium of personal trauma that John felt his anxieties about this meal recede, pushed aside by a strange warmth pervading him top to toe. It carried him through the rest of the drive and almost to the very ornate door of his father's luxurious home.
"Wow, this is unnecessarily huge and showy.
Yeah, that's my dad for you. He thinks if wealth isn't conspicuous, how will people know you're better than them?" It was surprising to be met at the door by his father rather than staff, but that was nothing compared to the surprise that his dad had plainly been slapped around the face by after he had looked past Rodney for a few moments, searching for a bride, and then made the connection. For once, actual visible emotions swarmed across his face. Shock, anger, a surprising amount of hurt, and then he smoothed it away again.
"John, 5 minutes late, I see. Are you planning to introduce me to your spouse?"
Rodney naturally was not going to be passively introduced like an appendage. He stuck out his hand.
"Dr. Rodney McKay. That's a doctor of astrophysics and engineering, not medicine. You'd be surprised how many people try to shove their boils in my face if I don't make that clear up front."
"How fortunate that I have no boils to shove at you." Rodney either missed the iciness completely or ignored it.
"And you wouldn't believe some of the, let's say, intimate ailments that I've been regaled with. There was this one guy with a leaking..."
"Perhaps we should go inside. No doubt you would like to refresh yourselves after the drive." John bit his cheek to keep from laughing at the visible frost forming over his father, even as he felt a distant anger and hurt over it. Never mind that his own introduction to Rodney had been less than ideal. Rodney was his chosen partner, the love of his life as far as his dad was concerned, at least, and he ought to be more willing to accept him. But of course John had deliberately produced Rodney like this, unvarnished and with no warning, to get this precise effect, a petty little gotcha, fully worthy of the bratty teenager he had once again become. He adjusted the conflicting feelings inside and followed the others in. Dinner had started badly when John realized that, in his eagerness to keep Rodney as a surprise, he hadn't warned his father not to cook with citrus. Fortunately, a hurried check of the menu had proved that only the fish course was affected and that nothing else had been in contact with the lemon, but John had managed to bring on himself both his father's disapproval and Rodney's visible hurt, both, in this instance, fully deserved. This kept his usual sharp, pointed responses to his father in check and had the weird effect of making his father become elaborately polite and considerate to Rodney, which would have been gratifying if it hadn't been so blatantly point-scoring. Rodney, in fact, was being used by both of them as a weapon against the other, something which John didn't fully realize until they had made it home and Rodney had just quietly gone to bed, all of his usual bounce and verbiage in abeyance. John gave him a moment before following and slipping in beside him.
"I'm sorry."
He had tried to put every ounce of sincerity and meaning he could into the words, Rodney sighed and turned over to face him. It's okay. Believe me, I understand grudges and pettiness, and your father really is a jerk. But it was kind of like reliving my childhood there for a while, except that my parents used me as an emotional punching bag, as well as a stick to beat each other with. Rodney, I take it that your father has a lot to do with this whole marriage thing.
You could say that. God, I'm a pathetic adolescent.
Rodney wrapped his arms around John and held him close, and for a moment there, he felt like crying, like sobbing out his every complex emotion and wallowing in the resultant lake, picking out and examining the rough spots one by one, like so many gasping carp. The feeling passed, but he pressed a little closer to Rodney until he fell asleep, just like that, feeling both physically and emotionally held. After that, Rodney plunged himself into work again, and John hit a busy patch at work, so they only saw each other erratically over the course of the next several weeks, snatching a lunch here, an evening playing video games there, Rodney kissing John goodbye sometimes, in such a matter-of-fact, easy way that John kind of missed it when he didn't. But there were more and more tangible signs of Rodney in his home, notes and equations on the fridge in hurried script, the scent of a freshly cooked meal, a portion always set aside for John if he wanted to reheat it, an argument that trampled through the house whenever Rodney was working from home and John was trying to relax and kick back with a novel or his golf clubs. Rodney thought best when he was moving, not that he was ever not moving in some way, even when asleep and twitching like a softly dreaming spaniel. So he tended to work out things while pacing and speaking so rapidly that John winced for the person on the other end of the phone, who must have had to develop special powers of hearing in order to keep up with him. But just as John, prowling from room to room and from activity to activity, in the vain hope of peace, was about to snap and throw a club at him, he would get excited and somehow speak even faster, his sentences broken up and apparently merging with his colleagues. And then he would sprint back to the study, like a child being finally let out to play, filled with such contagious delight that John felt he would forgive him anything. And hey, whatever happened to not getting emotionally involved? John had gotten used to having Rodney in his bed, too, a solid companion, warm, comforting, sometimes a little blanket-hogging, but even that was strangely enjoyable, playing the game of sneaking back the covers from him without waking him up, or better still, waking him up and receiving a look of sleepy confusion, followed by a wrapping up in the covers so comprehensive that John had to stuff his hand in his mouth, not to laugh before getting the spare duvet and settling down next to his giant burrito of a husband. Somehow he hadn't gotten around to either asking Rodney for more than sleep or arranging a one-night stand to take the edge off. He still retreated to the bathroom regularly, but it was getting less satisfying. Something was stopping him from having that discussion, but he couldn't work out what. But then that was nothing new. You are distracted, John. Taylor picked him up from the floor, where he had spent even more of their training session than usual. Are things going well with you and Rodney? John smiled as he did reflexively when he thought of Rodney. Actually, surprisingly well. Don't tell Ronan, though, or he'll just start giving out my phone number to every obnoxious stranger he meets. Taylor shook her head at him. Ronan is an excellent judge of character. He would never have suggested Rodney for you, unless he was certain that he was a good man at heart. John sighed but nodded. If he hadn't trusted Ronan deep down, then he doubted that he'd have gone through with it. He's not what I expected. I haven't quite worked out yet whether that's a good thing or not. Surprises are often good for us. Taylor had John on his knees with the stick pressed against his throat before he could blink. And sometimes they are just a reminder that you need to be paying more attention. Right, I'll try and work on that. The first Saturday they had off together, the weather decided it had been far too nice and mellow recently and decided to throw a full-on tantrum, wind and rain raging through the streets and putting paid to any thoughts of flying or even taking a walk. Rodney seemed all set to disappear into work again, but he was looking a little more than ordinarily pale and rather tired. He had spent another couple of nights recently in his study, and John had found their bed had grown larger and colder somehow in protest. John snagged his arm just lightly as he moved toward the door. "Looks like the kind of day for a movie marathon. Got any popcorn?" Rodney grinned. "Three kinds, actually. Oh, and nachos. We definitely need nachos." Discussing and arranging the snacks took half an hour, and then they had the job of picking some movies. "We are not watching Back to the Future." "Hey, it's a classic." John found himself enjoying the argument so much that he was almost disappointed when they finally had a short list of films, alternating choices, although in truth, they had similar enough tastes that John was pretty happy with all of them. It proved remarkably easy to just meld into the couch and Rodney as they watched movies, talking about everything and nothing, and all the things in between, and worked their way steadily through a mountainous pile of junk food that both Ronan and Taylor would have been mocking him for, though Ronan would eat at least as much, and Taylor would hog all the popcorn, her secret weakness. John had never considered that a perfect day might leave him with grease-stained fingers, a groaning stomach, and the plots of six different movies all merging into one in his brain, so that he was half convinced that Marty McFly had visited the Enterprise and battled acid-spurting aliens in a fedora. But it was somehow evening, and a sense of content had settled over him, along with the grease and the little flecks of salt, which he suddenly wanted badly to lick off Rodney's mouth. And he could. He knew that. Could just reach over and pull him into his arms and lips, and Rodney would go all soft and loving, though maybe with that hint of steel beneath, which only left him when he was too exhausted to hold on to it like a shield against the world. Or would he drop that too, just for John? But then if he did that, if he gave in to that urge, then he would be admitting that this was real, that this wasn't just a roommate's agreement with a higher-than-average cuddling quotient. He would have to take risks, throw his heart into the ring, open it up to a comprehensive crushing once again. He and Nancy had been good friends, tight. She was the only person whom John had considered marrying for herself, not because of any expectations. His father had approved of her, but that hadn't been either an incentive or a deterrent, because John had loved Nancy, and his father, for once, hadn't mattered in the slightest. They had only really dated for 3 months, but that had been enough to pull him in deep and hard, because he had cared, like that, once. Hadn't known how not to. And then Nancy had sat him down and explained that things weren't working out, and it was like being plunged into ice water and taking on so much of it that he had never quite shaken the last chilling drops. She had been reasonable, gentle, more apologetic than she'd needed to be, and John understood, he really did, that wanting someone gave them no obligation towards you. That it was better to say goodbye, however painfully, than to tie yourself into a relationship that you knew in your heart you would flail and suffer and drown in, and sometimes take everyone within reach down with you. But that didn't save him from hurting. And maybe it was after that that he'd taken up the fighting lessons and the sports car habit he'd thankfully grown out of, thrown himself into all manner of things involving physical courage and physical pain, to cover the emotional damage and cowardice. Rodney turned towards him. With a lopsided grin, he brushed John's arm gently, thinking of having an early night. John was torn between two possibilities, all stretched out and detached, staring down at both of them. He knew which one looked brighter, better, called loudest to his heart, but he'd never been good at doing what was best for him. "Yeah, I might finish a chapter or two, then come up." Rodney was asleep when John went up 2 hours later, soft and touchable and warm and with heartbreak written all over him in letters of fire. On Sunday, the weather was better, but Rodney got called into the lab for something or other, so John took the plane up alone. It didn't settle his mind like he'd hoped for. Instead, he went home early and browsed the little sticky notes everywhere, amusing himself with digging up his rusty complex math skills and putting his facility for numbers to a different use than accounts and spreadsheets. He thought of yesterday, when he had spoken more about himself than he had in years, even to Taylor and Ronan. It was easier somehow to slip a personal revelation, a childhood memory, an idea often felt but never fully expressed, into a conversation which was mostly concerned with science fiction movies. He had told Rodney all about his dreams of the Air Force, his reasons for turning it down, the nagging, gnawing regrets. "Well, that's just being ridiculous." "Thank you, Rodney. I'm so glad I opened up my soul to you." "No, but, I mean, regrets. That sort of regret that burns acid through you and shreds you to bits? You should save that for the things you can't actually change. Though better not leave it too long if you want to try again." John felt like he'd turned a corner into a new reality again. Try again? "Upper limit for application is 39, right? Just as well they've stopped all that DADT crap, or marrying me would have been a terrible idea." Rodney had smiled as if amused at the mere possibility that marrying him could be anything other than the best-case scenario for anyone. "Though honestly, I think you could do much better than the military. It's not as if you haven't got the money to retrain. Firefighting, air rescue, paramedic. I'd say you should use your flair for numbers and go into the sciences, but I know you've got this hero thing on your mind, so... And actually, I can see you saving lives. It fits." John wondered what Rodney had seen in him that matched an ideal he yearned for, but couldn't help feeling he fell a long way short of. He'd thought that he'd put his dreams firmly to rest all those years ago, but Rodney was right. It really wasn't too late. He'd tried working for his father. He'd put in his best efforts and pleased neither of them. Now it was past time he made some different decisions, got out from under the shadow he'd willingly shrouded himself in, and found out who he really was. John spent the rest of the day looking into a few different careers, weighing up pros, cons, and which suited him best, what he'd need to do to apply. And maybe no one would take him, and he'd be left back here where he'd started. But even if his preferred options were closed, then there were others, more, now that he'd started earnestly looking, than he'd expected to find. John wasn't a great cook, but he could manage a respectable spaghetti and meatballs and did so as a surprise and a thank you to Rodney when he got home. Except that he didn't come home. "John Shepherd McKay, I'm afraid we have some bad news for you." John's knees had gone, folded completely, and it wasn't until then that he'd realized how big a mistake he'd made, how he'd thought sex was the magic ingredient, and avoiding it would keep him from the dangers of loving Rodney while, all the time, he'd been falling and falling, deeper and deeper, on nothing but words and touches, small warming gestures, and some indefinable Rodney thing that had hooked itself around him like a solid, bracing arm against the storm. There had been a minor fire at the lab, nothing serious, but enough for the skeleton staff on duty to call Rodney in, so he could assess any damage to their projects, get started on any work that needed to be done. He'd never made it to the site. Rodney always goes by a quiet back road, which is usually nearly deserted on a Sunday. The whole thing looks like a setup. But we have a strong suspicion who's behind this, and we're doing everything we can. Somewhere, in amongst all the mess of him, and the lab people and police officers swirling around like bees, buzzing questions and concerns at him, and stinging him with both, Taylor and Ronan had shown up and made things better. They always did, one way and another, and John wondered if he'd ever told them just how much. Maybe that was something that needed to change before it became a regret he couldn't fix. When things had calmed down, and they were alone again, Ronan made him eat and drink something and sat him down, speaking clearly and calmly.
Police are going to take too long about this. I've been here before, got a pretty good hunch where they've taken him. I'll get him back, okay?
I shall go with you, Ronan. It is unwise to go in alone.
Three is better than two, right?
John, I do not think...
You're not trained for this, Shepard.
Taylor, Ronan, you're my best friends, and I would do anything for either of you, except not go and get my goddamned husband back.
John made sure his phone was charged in case of any news while they were gone. Good news, he told himself firmly, and they set off, only stopping briefly at Ronan's to pick up a few things.
It was strange how calm he felt now, just as Rodney's peaks of agitation and energy had soothed and relaxed him, pushed him into being the more stable, centered one of the two. So his being in peril brought out a kind of cool determination.
He had no real fear of death or being hurt, only that they would be too late, which made him extremely impatient when Ronan stopped at a roadside cafe. Not sure this is really the best time for a snack. Actually, I think it kind of is.
Ronan explained things briefly, some sort of hidden connection he'd discovered between the restaurant owners and some shady organization or other, but John didn't take in the details. The important point was that Rodney was very likely to be in there, and they were going to get him out. They slipped around back, John trying to keep everything Taylor had taught him in mind, how to walk light, how to be aware of his body, how to pay attention. There wasn't a guard. John was hit by doubts about Ronan's intel, but then reflected that they probably hadn't expected anyone to be on to them, and posting an obvious guard would be like a big red flag if anyone spotted them. And then they were moving in, fast and efficient, Ronan and Taylor working smoothly together, John making up for his lack of experience by sheer simple need, and some hard, sharp inner part of him which cut through all the bullshit and worries and focused on the now. There were several guards inside, and they all had guns, but John found his mind replaying every technique he'd ever learned and putting it to good use. All in all, it could only have taken a few minutes to get inside, overpower the guards, and break into the storeroom where Rodney was being held, tied up and dumped in the corner, like just another sack of ingredients. But to John, it had felt like an infinite period, as though he lived a whole lifetime in those moments.
Rodney!
John let Ronan cut the ropes. Then he claimed Rodney for his own, helping him to the car outside while Taylor called for assistance, checking him over, keeping his hands always in contact, light and careful, but needing to feel Rodney's life, his heartbeat, his reality for himself.
Oh God, I'm so glad you found me. I was beginning to feel like a sack of potatoes. Thought I might get so into the role they'd slice me up for the evening hot pot, which is terrible here, by the way. Really awful, honestly. I could only have improved the flavor.
John found bruises. Too many bruises. But no serious injuries. Nothing on the outside, anyway. Inside, Rodney was going to need a lot longer to recover. After that initial burst of relief-fueled babbling, he'd gone quiet and still, vanishing inside himself like he was reliving the experience over again. John held his hand tight until the police and medics arrived, and for as long as he could after that, staying with him in the ambulance, where they took him in for observation and a more thorough examination. Rodney was too tired afterwards to talk much. John watched him rest for a while until exhaustion caught up with him too, and impatiently hauled him down to sleep. Rodney's bruises were much better after a week, but he had been told to stay at home for the next month despite all his protests.
It's not as if I'm the sort to downplay my injuries. If I say I'm fine, then I mean that I'm absolutely fine.
Maybe it's not just the bruising they're worried about. Rodney crossed his arms impatiently, but it just made him look brittle and lost instead of giving him the air of authority or defiance he was probably aiming for.
I've been living with the threat of something like this for years now. You get to a certain level of achievement in the science world, and you unlock a whole set of enemies in the process. It's just something you live with. And besides, you got me out of there before they got around to the stuff they were threatening to.
And that, That was a visible gulp, and the thought of just how bad it could have gone. And John couldn't help himself from wrapping around Rodney like a blanket, holding him tight, feeling him shake and keep shaking, like he'd maybe never stop.
Told you, you'd be good at this hero stuff.
Rodney spoke soft against his neck, and John squeezed a little tighter, letting him know he didn't have to be strong, didn't have to pretend that it was nothing, that he didn't have nightmares every night that crept sometimes into the day. Perhaps I should tell you all the ways you've been a hero to me, had quite a few enlightening thoughts over the last few days.
Yeah?
Rodney lifted his head up and looked at John, intense and focused. Something shifted in his gaze.
Maybe you could tell me later. For now, could we?
John answered with a kiss, deep and full of passion, and with hands that were a little overwhelmed at suddenly being allowed to roam wherever they wanted. They mapped Rodney out, steady and slow at first, but then getting all caught up in the feel of him, gripping, touching, stroking, offering, possessing, with far less control and far more sheer enjoyment than John could remember having for a long, long time. He wasn't quite sure how they made it to the bedroom. Probably not on a flying carpet made entirely of little hearts, though he wasn't ruling it out. But his first sight of Rodney naked was something he couldn't imagine ever forgetting. John kissed his way over and down him, reminding him that he was alive, he was safe, that he was loved, with every brush of the lips, every pass of the tongue.
Oh, that's good. Maybe I should get kidnapped more often.
John gripped his thighs a little too hard and had to forcibly ease his hands out of their death grip.
Sorry, bad joke. I lost you.
Rodney leaned up and stroked down his back, reassuring John now instead of the other way around.
No, you didn't. You found me.
There were no more words after that. Naturally, it was during quality post-coital snuggle time, while drifting along on a sea of something scarily close to content, that doubts and unease slipped in and poked at John, with smug little smiles as if he thought he could get rid of them so easily.
You never told me why you needed to get married.
Rodney was hovering on the edge of sleep, not quite ready to leave this moment and fall right in. He yawned, wide and loud.
Does it matter?
I guess not. As long as it's nothing that will turn around and bite us later on. As long as you don't end up leaving me because of it. But nothing was ever guaranteed, and however much he felt right here and now, that he would always love Rodney and Rodney him. Things might change. They might change. The world was full of the unexpected, Rodney being very much one of them. And if that happened, he'd break his heart all over again. But he got to have this first. It felt worth a broken heart. John kissed Rodney. He'd gotten a little addicted to that and shifted to a slightly more comfortable sleeping position. The thing is, I nearly got married before, twice, to the wrong people.
Okay.
John waited patiently, his thumb stroking rhythmically over Rodney's arm, soothing to both of them.
I'm not exactly... Well, I ought to be a catch by all reasonable criteria, but I do have a few...
Okay, a lot. Of personal failings from a relationship perspective. And my sister was always so determined that I'd be happy like she is, and also somewhat keen to point out exactly how picky I shouldn't be, and I can't really argue the point.
John could argue the point, and he planned to, but he pushed aside his feelings on the subject for now to let Rodney finish.
So when I met someone who seemed interested and wasn't an awful human being, then I always let myself think this was it, that I should get the wedding ring out as soon as it wasn't actually creepy to do so, or if I'd never get another chance. And twice, I actually got to that point. Except that I realized at the last minute that it wouldn't work out. And it all finished up with me hurting people I had, and still have, a great regard and affection for. Just not what they deserve from me. And contrary to popular opinion, in the lab at least, I'm not actually a heartless human being.
I don't hurt people on purpose. It's just a side effect of being me. One of my least favorite parts.
John risked a reassuring kiss, light enough not to break the flow.
I promised myself not to do that again. But then there was this girl, and she was smart and beautiful and funny, but all wrong for me in so many other ways. I mean, seriously, there was a car crash imminent that you would be able to see from space. But I dated her a few times anyway, because how could I turn down beautiful and smart and funny? Until I caught myself bracing myself to propose to her, like a prisoner contemplating the gallows. I broke it off, of course, there and then, but I was so horrified that it might happen again, that I had this set pattern I couldn't break out of, that when Ronan dropped by out of the blue and told me about you, well, it seemed perfect. I could get the whole marriage thing out of my system without hurting anyone else, and you'd get a low-maintenance companion who wouldn't bore you to tears. Win-win all around. Low maintenance is not a phrase I'd ever use about you. I'm not sure if that's a compliment or not. John laughed softly. You know, he told me that I'd like you because you weren't beautiful, sexy, or nice. And before you get mad, I'd fight him on two of those points. And I didn't understand at the time that he meant I was looking for the right attributes and not the right person. Maybe I should still be mad at him for interfering, but I kind of owe him this debt of undying gratitude. Rodney leaned forward and rested their foreheads together. Yeah, me too, me too.
John, what is the meaning of this?
John didn't need to look up to know what his dad was referring to, but he did anyway, and without any knowing smirks or defensive body language. He doubted that he'd ever quite stop wanting his father's approval, his unconditional love, but he felt like that desire wasn't pinning him in place anymore. There was a sense of loss attached to that, but nothing compared to what he was gaining. I'm resigning, Dad. I'm sorry, I tried, I really did, but this was just never going to work out. John tried to interpret the flashes of emotion on his father's face, lightning fast and almost ghost-like, but couldn't catch hold of them with any certainty. But maybe this was best for both of them. The holding pattern they were in spanned both sides. Now that John was severing it, maybe his father could find some relief from it as well. And maybe he didn't have to sever it all the way. I'll let you know when I've got settled into my new job if you want me to. Patrick looked at him for a moment and nodded so slightly that John almost missed it.
You'll do as you think best, I'm sure, as always.
He walked away, stiff and upright and granite, turning just at the door.
You'll bring your what?
Rodney, over to dinner on Sunday.
That would be good, Dad. I'll check if he's free.
His father stiffened a little more, then nodded again.
Yes, of course, if you're both free.
He walked away, and John thought, just maybe he was free now.
Or getting there. The end.